listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm Rob Daly. This is your weekly European football podcast. Chris Parrott has decided to take Monday off to recover from his stag do. So Adam Summerton has very kindly stepped up to appear on the show this morning. Adam, hello.
Hello, Rob. How was the stag do?
Oh, well, I was curled up in a ball for most of Sunday afternoon. I've not been in great condition, I'll be honest. But we did go to, part of it included a European away day in that we went to Wales and watched Cardiff against Ipswich Town.
Do you need your passport for that one?
Fortunately not. I mean, I'd like my money back, if anything. It was Warnock against McCarthy in 2017. It actually wasn't that bad a game, but Cardiff winning 3-1. But Chris didn't really care. He's having a lovely time. So, so he'll be back next week, I'm sure. Adam, how have you been, by the way?
Very good. Yeah, another good weekend of games and lots to look forward to. So, yeah, really good. Thanks.
Okay, well, let's talk about Serie A because we are going to be eventually getting on to what's happening in the La Liga title race on the show. We're going to be talking about the Eredivisie with Sky Sports commentator Richard Connolly on the Dutch top flight. And we'll touch upon some of the key stories in Germany as well. But Adam, Serie A is really your league at the moment with BT Sport. And I wanted to talk about the game you commentated on Sunday night, Roma, who sort of stayed within touching distance of Juve just about with a victory against Sassuolo. Do you think they have any realistic chance of catching the Bianconeri into the remaining weeks of the season?
Well, I mean, clearly, mathematically, it's still possible, but whether it's probable, I think not. I think that Juventus just have that extra 5% right now that separates them from the likes of Roma and Napoli in particular. Sometimes it's just about mental resilience. It's about concentration. It's about being streetwise. It's something that both Sarri and Spalletti, the respective coaches of those two clubs I just mentioned, have each alluded to just in the last week. It's really important qualities and things that they're yet to really find on a consistent basis. I think both sides have squads where you look at them and think, goodness me, they're blessed with so much talent and they play football that's so easy on the eye. We saw that at the weekend from both Roma and Napoli. But as I say, it's just that extra 5% for me that separates Juventus from the rest right now in Italy.
Okay, so tell us about Roma's victory and how they've been doing under Spalletti, given that he's been linked with potentially taking over at Juventus at some point.
Well, it was so important that they responded quickly in the league to that disappointment in Europe. It was undoubtedly an opportunity missed going out of the Europa League at that stage. So they were bitterly disappointed about that, although Spalletti felt that he was pretty happy with the level of performance. And we shouldn't forget they did win on the night by 2-1 against Lyon. But they still needed to. It was a very flat atmosphere at the Olympico just before and just after kickoff. I really noticed that the supporters as flat as the players seemed to be. So they needed to deliver and they faced the Sassuolo side. They've got nothing really to lose. They're not going to go down. They're not going to get in the Europa League places. And they were able to play with a degree of freedom and took the lead through Defrel, who's a centre forward who Roma have looked at in the past and have considered signing. I know that because Spalletti has said it. So he came into the side, scored a nice goal with Berardi and Politano involved. And it was Roma eventually came back and about 7 minutes later, Paredes scored with a lovely hit from about 25 yards out. Then Mo Salah scored with a tap in added time at the end of the first half. And then in the second half, really, I would say that despite a bright start to the second half by Sassuolo, eventually Roma really started to show their class and their authority as much as anything else. And Edin Dzeko came on and got his 21st, I think it is, league goal of the season, having come on as a sub, was rested to the bench. And they were fairly comfortable winners in the end, Roma.
Well, they remain second in the standings, just 2 points ahead of Napoli, who had Dries Mertens score a wonderful, wonderful free kick in their 3-2 win at Empoli. I wanted to talk about AC Milan as well, Adam. 1-0 winners against Genoa. Matty Fernandes with the only goal in that game. And it seems that they're still seventh in the table chasing European football. But have you seen a big improvement with the Rossoneri this season?
I think it would be stretching it of me to say a big improvement, but I think we are seeing a definite improvement. It's gradual. And I think that when you've sort of conquered all in the past, past. I think sort of winning the small battles, retaking ground, maybe doesn't feel great. Maybe it doesn't, you don't get the same euphoria from it. Maybe don't appreciate it as much. But I think that is what is happening at Milan right now. And we should remember that Vincenzo Montella, who was appointed over the summer, is getting results and getting consistent results. I think that's 5 wins in their last 7. They so narrowly lost to Juventus as well, but he's getting these results in what is trying circumstances. He's had injuries to really important players. One that stands out perhaps above all others is Bonaventura, who's maybe been their best player for the last couple of years and is out for still quite a while, yeah, as I understand it. So they've been missing him and they've been missing others at times as well. But you know, I think the thing that stands out for me is, despite all of that, and despite the scrutiny that you get when you are Milan, when you are Montella in charge of a big club like that, they're getting the results and they're building it, fostering a fantastic team spirit, an ability to grind out results as well. I mean, how wonderfully well they did with 9 men to win at Bologna, you might remember. While all this takeover shenanigans, debacle, whatever word you want to give it, is going on, what Montella is very skillfully doing is creating, in my opinion, the environment for when the money is eventually there to really move the club on. I think he's just doing the best with what he has at his disposal right now. So I've got a huge amount of admiration for Montella and the job that he's doing. And if he could get them into the Europa League, I think that would be a really big achievement in the circumstances.
Certainly would. I mean, you mentioned the takeover there, Adam. To give people, listeners, a reminder of the situation, a Chinese consortium came in and has paid, I think, €200 million in deposits so far towards the intention to fully take over at AC Milan. But the proper takeover has been delayed, I think, on 3 or 4 occasions now. And there's talk that the deal might be abandoned. I even saw some quotes from the CEO at AC Milan, Adriano Galliani, saying Milan are not orphans and Berlusconi is able to carry on, suggesting that the deal might not go through. And I saw the fans as well had a banner that at the game that said, you know, we want clarity or something like that. It just seems such a murky situation with this deal. It's hard to believe it wouldn't affect things on the pitch as well.
Absolutely. And again, that just kind of backs up what I'm saying about the great job that Montella is doing in the circumstances, because he mustn't know in terms of resources and money to spend in the summer, which isn't a long way away now. You know, all managers will be planning for that summer window right now. And he can't really do that because he doesn't know if he's going to have any money to spend. So again, that's just another example of how it's difficult. It is an incredibly frustrating situation, I should imagine, for Milan supporters. As you mentioned, the deadline has been moved and has passed on so many occasions now. And I really read, maybe mistakenly, I don't know, but I read quite a lot into that quote from Galliani just recently, where he said that, seemed to be hinting that maybe Berlusconi could be there again for the long haul. I thought that was quite significant that he said that. And we'll see. And if it does end up being that they go back to the future with Berlusconi, you know, will he be able to commit the resources to get Milan back to where they feel they should be, which is in the Champions League and challenging for Serie A year in, year out? We can only judge on what we've seen in the last 5 years or so, and the suggestion to that is probably not. But who knows with Silvio Berlusconi? As we know, he's quite a character, and it's hard to argue with his track record in the 30 years that he's been in charge. The president of Milan, he's brought incredible success. But they are a club who've fallen a long way. And I think that's something that we always have to bear in mind when we give an assessment of where Milan are, judge them of the Milan of the last 5 years. You know, I think that's the mistake that many people make. And it's why maybe they've gone through so many managers in recent times as well, is that managers are judged on the standards maybe of the past and not of the present. And that's what I'm trying to do in judging Montella. I think in the present, in the current circumstances, Milan are doing pretty well, actually.
Berlusconi being quite a character might be the understatement of the season as well, Adam.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But I think you're right. I think people should take the time to read about the changes that he made to the club in the 1980s and really understand the relationship between Berlusconi and the players. I also saw some quotes this week from Gigi Buffon, the Juventus goalkeeper, who said he's concerned about the level of foreign investment into Serie A. He doesn't think it's good for the league at the moment, although it's easy for the Bianconeri perhaps to say that at the moment, given their, the Agnelli family and how well Juve are doing. 8 points clear at the top of the table after a 1-0 win at Sampdoria. Juan Cuadrado with the winner in that game. And Juve, Adam, have been drawn against Barcelona in the Champions League. What shape do you think Juve are in to get revenge for that 2015 Champions League final defeat?
Well, I think the first thing to mention is what you've just said there, which is quite interesting, that the use of that word revenge, because they seem to be trying to avoid talking about that at all opportunities, full stop, really. They don't seem to want to take that sort of narrative. They want to avoid that, maybe fearful that it would create the wrong emotions around the game. And also, it's noticeable how clever and Allegri was when asked about this Barcelona tie in the press conference that followed it, when he said, look, this is normal. We are Juventus. This is where we should be. I've faced Barcelona many times as a coach. I don't think that he wants to hype this up too much and make them feel like they're coming up against a side that is too big for them to take on, because he's right. They are Juventus. They should be where they are. And they've had every right to be where they are, because they're a very good side. And I still think they've got a fantastic chance of winning the competition. And one of the reasons, the key reason perhaps I say that, is that in a year where we've seen so many goals, I think it was a record number in the round of 16, didn't see too much good defending in the Champions League round of 16. And Juve are capable of doing that. I'd say along with Atletico, they're probably buying, you could make a case for on their day as well. But I'd say Juventus have perhaps got the best defence left in the competition. And that could stand them in good stead in a year where we've seen this unbelievable amount of attacking football. They were the only team, albeit they played in both legs against 10 men for long periods, they were the only team to keep two clean sheets in the round of 16. You know, that could all completely go to pot if Messi, Neymar and Suarez really click. We all know that they're capable of destroying any side. But I think if Juventus can keep it tight in Turin in the first leg, maybe take a narrow lead with them to Spain, I think they'd have a really good chance.
Buffon and key Juventus players are part of that latest Italy squad, because, of course, we are heading into an international break over the forthcoming weekend. Italy will take on Holland and Albania in two upcoming fixtures. A 25-man squad named by Ventura, the man who took over from Conte after the European Championships in France. And Gabbiadini, I want to ask you a couple on this squad, Adam, but Gabbiadini's form for Southampton has seen him force his way back into the Azzurri squad, and many would argue a thoroughly deserved place in that squad.
You can't really argue with that. I'm amazed. I think he is himself, he's even been quoted as saying that he can't quite believe how well it's gone for him so far at Southampton.
Although I can't either, to be honest. I mean, I had slight reservations about the level of impact he could have in England, but instant success.
Yeah, and playing as a centre forward as well. And I'll hold my hands up and say that one of the things when he was at Napoli that I got so frustrated was that he was used as a kind of a backup centre forward last season to Higuain. This season at times when Milik was out injured, he was one of the solutions that Sarri looked to try and turn to. In the end, it was Mertens who's been the solution through the middle. But they hoped that Gabbiadini would be able to do it. And I just looked at it, I thought, he isn't a centre forward, because I remembered him in his Sampdoria days when he was so effective, so devastating at times, cutting in from the right on his left foot. I saw him score some wonderful goals doing that, and I was frustrated that we never truly saw him played in that position on a consistent basis for Napoli. And when Southampton were signing him, I hoped that that's maybe where he would be used for them. But and he's been fantastic. So maybe it was just a case of a player who needed a change in environment to really see his skill set come to the fore and show what he can do. And his form has been fantastic. He deserves his place in the squad if you're picking up players on form, undoubtedly. I know he did pick up an injury, didn't he, though, at the weekend, which I just hope that doesn't halt his progress. Just speaking to one or two people who also watch a lot of regular Serie A football, I know that there are still some in Italy who are yet not convinced that this will continue long term for Gabbiadini. I think there are a lot in Italy who are very, very surprised at the form that he showed in the Premier League and feel that they're still of the opinion that this will not be a long-term thing, that eventually his form will fizzle out and maybe he will not get anywhere near the heights he set in the early stages. But clearly, you know, you hope that isn't the case and that he carries on. But there is still one or two people I think he needs to convince.
And it's a squad that features the older experienced players, the likes of Bonucci, Barzagli and Buffon, of course, and the younger players like Donnarumma. But for people who don't maybe necessarily watch a great deal of Italian football, I know you think this squad's in good shape, Adam. Can you give us an idea of some of the players that you think are going to come to the fore for the Azzurri over the coming years?
Yeah, I think that we hear this phrase in football at times, don't we, that a squad's blessed with a great amount of sort of youthful exuberance and experience. I mean, just the goalkeeping position is an example of that. You've got such an established international footballer like Buffon, and then Donnarumma coming through the ranks. In terms of centre halves, you've got Romagnoli at Milan, you've got Rugani at Juventus, two players who are playing, who've shown that they can do it on a relatively consistent basis, particularly in the case of Romagnoli. So they're ready to come in as soon as the likes of Chiellini and Bonucci and Barzagli eventually move out. You look into the midfield, someone like Daniele De Rossi is 33 now, coming toward the end of his career, but you have players like Verratti. Gagliardini has kicked on since going from Atalanta to Inter. Verratti is 24 and one of the best midfielders in world football already for me. So, I mean, they're just, you know, some examples of what I'm talking about when I feel that they're in good shape. Another great example is Belotti, Rob, up front, who for me is one of the most informed centre forwards in European football this season. And if you look at things like length of time on his contract, current form and age, I'd say he's probably one of the most valuable players in world football right now as well, Belotti. His release clause is 100 million euros. So I think they're in pretty good shape. Even players like Politano, who will be less known to maybe people who went from Roma to Sassuolo, I think it's pretty exciting times for the Italian national side going forward.
Well, a final thing I wanted to ask you about, Adam, is in France, and I'll get onto it in a moment. Just to let people know that the shape things in the French title race, Monaco stay three clear of Paris Saint-Germain after a 3-0 win at Caen. At the weekend, Mbappe scored twice. Paris Saint-Germain got a win over an in-form Lyon on Saturday night. And it's a two-horse title race in Ligue 1 because Nice lost drew at the weekend, so dropped points again. Kylian Mbappe, Adam, a player you saw alongside me in the Champions League game as Monaco beat Manchester City to reach the quarterfinals of the competition. How excited are you by the form and the talent of Kylian Mbappe, the teenage striker of Monaco?
Yeah, hugely excited. I think with a young player like this, though, we always have to be a little careful not to get too carried away. And it's hard not to do that when you look at the numbers that he's racking up. I mean, his current form is sensational. And to be doing it in the Champions League now as well, to score his first Champions League goal in that tie against City, and then get another one in the second leg as well. He's showing he can do it on the very biggest stage and against, you know, some of the biggest opposition as well. I think that he's lucky to be where he is too, because at Monaco, maybe there isn't necessarily the pressure that there would be at PSG, for example. Even, you know, a club like Lyon, for example, you know, with the supporter bases they have, there would maybe be more scrutiny, more pressure on him. I think Monaco, with their nod to youth policy as well, something that they've always been really big on is nurturing talent. I think he's a really good place. I hope he stays there. I hope that he doesn't move this coming summer, because I think that he's in the right place for the stage of development that he's at right now. So massively excited. I'm glad that he's got a call up to the France squad. It would have been almost impossible to ignore him, really. But you know, as we've seen with Rashford as well in England, it's for various reasons, not many of them not his own fault, as maybe not been able to have quite the same level of performance as he had when he burst onto the scene. So Rashford's still playing well, by the way. I just don't think that he's been quite as explosive as maybe he was when he first came onto the scene last season. But that can be down to consistency of playing. And that's the key thing that Mbappe is going to get at Monaco, is that he is going to play regularly, as he already is doing. What's a great shame about Monaco is, I think I've said this to you in the last week, is I think inevitably several of their players will be picked off in the summer. We'll look back at this squad and say, goodness me, can't quite believe that Monaco had all those players who will inevitably, many of them go on to even bigger and better things. Can't believe they had all of those players at the same time. So, I think it's really exciting for both him and his club and his country right now.
Mbappe looking to make his international debut for the French national team as they take on Luxembourg and Spain in the coming days. Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show as always.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
OK, time for part two of Football in Europe. A reminder of what happened in Spain at the weekend. Andre Gomez scored against his former club as Barcelona beat Valencia 4-2, while Real Madrid won 2-1 at Bilbao, and Sevilla's 3-1 defeat at Atletico, who were sensational in that game with Griezmann scoring again, means surely it's a two-team title race in La Liga this campaign. In Germany, Anthony Modeste got a hat-trick for Cologne in a 4-2 win over Hertha. Modeste hasn't made the latest France squad, despite the fact he scored more than Lewandowski this season in the league. And Bayern are now 13 clear after a win at Gladbach. Leipzig dropped points again, meaning that Bayern surely are going to be champions in Germany as well. And Thomas Tuchel, the Dortmund coach, heavily linked with Arsenal this morning in some of the German press anyway. We're going to talk about the Eredivisie with Sky Sports commentator on the Eredivisie. It is Richard Connolly. Richard, thank you very much for coming back on the show.
You're very welcome. I'm glad you've had me back, Rob. Thank you.
Last time you were on, there was some maintenance work going on at your house. Are you?
There was, yes.
Are we in a calmer place today, or are things just as frantic at the Connolly household?
Well, they're so frantic I've come away from the Connolly household to speak to you. I'm sitting in my car overlooking a village green in Leafy, Surrey. It's really a rather pleasant vista. So, yes, unless the local geese start attacking the car, we should be in for a calmer 10-minute period, I think.
All right, well, imagine that Leafy, Surrey field is the flat plains of the Netherlands, because we're going to be talking about the Eredivisie. PSV Eindhoven with a 1-0 win over Vitesse at the weekend. I know you commentated on that game. Do you think PSV are out of the title race despite the fact that they won that game?
Well, I do, really, and I have done ever since they lost to Feyenoord in that incredible match a couple of weeks ago, decided by millimetres on the goal decision system. I mean, they are 8 points behind, despite having won 9 games out of 10 since the winter break. And that tells you that Feyenoord's form is such that it's extremely unlikely that they're going to drop the points that they'll need to drop for PSV to have a chance. And the more you watch PSV, and actually against Vitesse, I was very underwhelmed by them, but actually by the whole spectacle, to be honest. You can't really see them stringing together such an incredible run of results that they would be able to challenge even if Feyenoord dropped those points. So in my view, yes, they're out of the title race, but they've closed in on Ajax this weekend for second place, and second place is big because it has a potential route into the Champions League.
Okay, we'll talk about Ajax in a moment. Let's talk about Feyenoord. 2-1 winners against Heerenveen at the weekend. It really does seem like Van Bronckhorst, with Ajax dropping points this weekend, it looks like he's closing in on that title for Feyenoord that they've been waiting so long for.
Yeah, and that he's been waiting so long for as well. I mean, even though he was a player in the Eredivisie for some time, he never lifted the title as a player, and he has not done so as a coach yet, obviously, either. Dirk Kuyt has never lifted the Eredivisie title as well. He got a start this weekend. That was a big win for them, away to Heerenveen, who are an excellent side with some terrific young attacking players in particular. It's a passionate ground with a real regional identity in Friesland, and that had banana skin written all over it, particularly when Feyenoord went 1-0 down. So to come back and win that game with an excellent goal from Tony Vilhena, who's in the Netherlands squad, and we're going to talk about that a little later as well, it's a big win. This is a tough run of matches that they've come through with that PSV game. They lost to Sparta, but the win over here in Bay is a big one for them. And I think that they are quite rightly beginning to feel that they are very nearly there. They just need five more wins from the remaining 7 games, and that will mathematically do it for them because their goal difference is so much better than the chasing pack.
Well, let's talk about a player who I think has been excellent for Feyenoord this season whenever I've seen them, and that's the physical presence of Nicolai Jurgensen up front. He scored at the weekend 19 goals now. Is he the player that the striker that they've really been looking for since, I'd even go as far to say, as Graziano Pella left the club for Southampton?
Yeah, I think that was, 3 seasons ago? I mean, he certainly is. I mean, I don't think he is an extraordinary footballer, but he's seldom one who's really going to catch the eye. But what he does is link the play very effectively, provide a focal point. He's thoughtful. He's certainly an above-average finisher, and he has lifted the level. Last season they played with a guy who's mostly sub this year, Mikael Kramer, who's a really tall striker who can be a presence and can be a nuisance in the air, but doesn't have the finishing ability, and the home fans got on his back very quickly. But Jurgensen got off and running very quickly, and they took him from Danish football and he paid, I think, 3.5-4 million euros for him. And that investment has come back and paid off immediately. I mean, His goal scoring record is excellent, and the players are he's got speed either side of him as well. He's not the quickest, but he's a very intelligent link man. That's the key thing for me.
Okay, let's talk about Ajax. 1-1 draw with Excelsior at the weekend. And from what you were telling me before we start recording, Richard, was this really was a tale of perhaps two teenagers as they drew 1-1 at Excelsior, who are down the wrong end of the table.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a bad result for Ajax, first and foremost, and it means they're now 6 points behind, and they'd been 4 points behind before the weekend. And Ajax play Feyenoord at home, the Classica, in the next game after the international break. So for them to drop a couple of points before that was a real sickener for them. 6 points behind, evidently a must-win for them in a fortnight. But in terms of the Excelsior game, first thing, they look tired. Europa League, they're into the quarterfinals. That's wonderful for them. A massive emotional effort to get past FC Copenhagen and get through. But one of the guys who's really showed his stuff in the Europa League is 17-year-old centre-half called Matthijs de Ligt. And he doesn't look like he's 17, maybe facially a bit, but he's a huge fellow. Very gifted on the ball, very strong, quick enough, has made some excellent tackles. And he's caught the eye to such a degree that he's made full Netherlands squad. This game against Excelsior was only his second start in the Eredivisie. And before the season started, he hadn't even played for Jong Ajax in the league below. So he's... to call his rise meteoric is to understate it, quite frankly. Anyway, having been called into the Netherlands squad, he then made a mistake, which cost Ajax the opening goal of the game. And in the end, probably cost them a couple of points, because though Justin Kluivert, the other 17-year-old you reference, scored his first goal for the Ajax first team at the other end, they didn't have enough about them to beat lowly Excelsior. And will reflect on a pretty poor afternoon. But yeah, I mean, they're two players with massive futures. But for De Ligt to come through in only really a handful of first-team games and to make the full Netherlands squad, it's absolutely astonishing. He's never even played for the under-21s, so it's astonishing.
Yeah, really remarkable. Holland taking on Bulgaria and Italy in their upcoming friendlies. Lots of Premier League names in the squad. We talk about Vorm, Martin Zindy, Blint, Wijnaldum, of course, at Liverpool, Leroy Fer from Swansea as well, and Vincent Janssen makes the squad. But Memphis Depay, a player who came to the Premier League and really failed to have an impact at Manchester United. He scored the goal of the season, I think, in European football very recently. Do you think it's right that he's finally getting some football and it's probably good news for the national team as well that he's playing regularly?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think there's no question that he should be in the Netherlands squad on current form. But I mean, there's also an argument that he's played well for the Dutch side previously. I mean, Vincent Janssen, you wouldn't say, is in particular form domestically. He's in the full national squad as well. I mean, he is a player. Memphis Depay is a player of extraordinary talent. And it's just been about channeling that. He's not going to be the last player to make the jump from Eredivisie to Premier League and find that gap initially too much to overcome. I mean, he was a young player with relatively little experience, what, two full seasons of starting every week. And even though he's shown enough to convince Louis van Gaal to play him at the World Cup and all the rest of it, it was still going to be difficult. And there's all the stuff away from the pitch that changes in your life when you make an adjustment like that. But you look at other players who have failed to make it in the Premier League, and I'm thinking immediately off the top of my head of Angel Di Maria. And we know about their talent. It's not just about a man's ability, whether he can play in a foreign country, in a foreign environment. It's all manner of things have to fall into place. Now, for whatever reason, he didn't settle. He didn't find a place in the team. He's still good enough to come again, and certainly young enough to come again. And he's proving in France that he has ability that very few have. You know, playing for Manchester United was always going to be difficult, different completely to playing for a team like PSV. And listen, I still have total faith that at the end of his career, we'll be looking back and saying he brought joy to a lot of people and was one of the top players in European football for a spell.
Patrick Kluivert, obviously, you mentioned him there, scored his first Eredivisie goal on the weekend. He obviously doesn't make the Dutch squad yet. But there must be so much hype around him, Richard. I mean, it's tough, obviously, to be the son of a player who was iconic for club and country.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of his problem is that what you just said. I mean, I think you called him Patrick, Rob, and everybody kind of does once
in
a while.
Justin, there we go.
Yeah, Justin. But you see, that it happens. It happens. I mean, for us commentators, it's going to happen too. I mean, I think for him, it's actually a colossal advantage because Patrick is director of football, sporting director at Paris Saint-Germain. Yeah. I mean, his contacts book must be extraordinary. And the name is. I mean, I don't think the hype can be a bad thing. When you look at the way he plays, you can see that he is a terrifically well-adjusted young guy who is being groomed for a brilliant career. I mean, from the very moment he made his Eredivisie debut, which was some weeks ago now as a substitute, you could see that for a player of his youth, he had way more than your average next star of the future. He's got dribbling ability. But the thing is, he's got speed. The thing is, he can see what's around him. That's the thing. And you could immediately sense that he was going to be part of the Ajax side for a while, but he was going to go on to bigger and better things. I mean, it felt immediate to us watching him at the time. It doesn't happen that often when you see a player and you think, oh my, he's got it. And I don't, I have no wish to add to the hype, but you can only say what you see. And I think he is destined for a huge career. He's got the ability. He's got the looks. He's got the contacts book. I mean, I think he's going to go to the top.
It took me a while to even get used to Danny Sturridge instead of Dean Sturridge. I don't want to train my brain into that change, which is hard to believe now in hindsight.
Dean Sturridge is. He was. I enjoyed watching Dean Sturridge. I remember him scoring some terrific goals for Wolves.
He certainly did. Justin Kluivert is the player we will have to keep an eye out for going forward. Richard, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Go back to the madhouse.
Yeah, my pleasure. I will speak to you again, no doubt, from maybe another calm field somewhere in Surrey rather than my house of mayhem.
That'd be perfect. Everyone, thank you very much for downloading the podcast. I'm going to force Chris to be back on the latest one as he recovers, on the next one as he recovers from his very own stag do. Tweet us at FIE Podcast with your thoughts on the show. And if you do have the time, please leave us a review on iTunes.
This is Football in Europe.